Hello and welcome to the Flute View Radio. This is Viviana Guzman for theflutview.com.
Hello, everybody. I am Viviana Guzman reporting for the Flute View magazine. I have a very special guest today. He is the formal principal flutist of the London Philharmonic for 20 years, and also the principal flutist of the Philharmonia Orchestra for 5 years. Help me welcome Paul Edmund Davies, the one and only.
Yes!
Right when I pressed live, I saw that you had gone live too, and I was like, oh no.
You see these gray hairs? They were dark brown 2 minutes ago.
Oh my goodness.
There's a funny thing about a certain kind of male and technology, and I'm that certain kind of male, I'm afraid.
But how can you say that with all the books you have and every other? Because you certainly kept up. You did keep up with the times, you know.
Well, yes. You're very generous saying that. But the reason that I kept up was just despair, because I was I was really bad at schoolwork.
Oh.
And yeah, I mean, I knew from the age I was 12 onwards I wanted to play the flute. So you know, I was just flute. And when the school I went to, when I got to the age of 15, I had, you know, it was a very, you know, exciting new test that, and it was going to tell me what I should really do in my future as an adult. And of course, I already knew I wanted to be a musician and I wanted to be a flute player. So, and I was clearly very bad at this test, because the results came back and I was summoned to my housemaster for a discussion on the points. And he said, yes, Edmund Davies, well, you know, you didn't really do terribly well, it has to be said, but they've come back with some very constructive advice for you. And they say, it's very clear from the tests that you're clearly very good with your space army. So that was my
verdict.
My efforts at a big. But the weird thing is, you've hit on a very interesting point, because you know, if I look back, which is always a mistake, but you know, I seem to have done quite a few things, you know, and I'm getting on now. But in the past, I've done quite a lot of things, and you know, for example, I wanted to make a CD at some stage, and you know, the whole thing about how do you put the wheels in motion to do that, I had no idea. But I think it's like so many things, is that once you dip your toe in the water and you discover that actually it's nothing like as cold or painful as you thought it was going to be, It isn't rocket science. So you know, and the other brilliant thing that happened was that I called a trio I had with two other musicians. I named it after a favourite champagne, and it was called the Dutz, Dutz trio. And you know, the next thing we knew, the Champagne House was in touch with us, and they said, you know, we're delighted we've got three classical musicians who have, you know, got that name. You know, would you like to make a promotional CD for us?
Ah.
Well, you're never going to say no to that, are you? So that's how these things happen. I mean, you're either dropped in at the deep end and you just have to sort of come up for air occasionally and work it all out. Or else, you know, you realize that it isn't ultimately as complicated. And I think it's partly the woe of many musicians, actually, is that we by nature, we've got our own little bubble, and anything. Same for me, you know, if 30 years ago, you'd say to me, oh, you know, I'd have done five CDs, as it turned out, with a champagne house. I would be, you know, an authority or very knowledgeable about everything champagne related. And I don't just mean the wines, I mean the history. And there's so many things that are fascinating about that area, particularly if you go back to medieval times and the Crusades. And basically the landowners in Champagne, they gave their land to the abbeys and the churches on the basis that they could then go off on a killing spree on the Crusades. So it's just all this sort of little bits of history are quite fascinating. And also in the same way that, you know, I would have never have thought that I'd end up writing, flute exercise books. But I've done it, and I still continue to do it, and I enjoy doing it. So I think, on this subject, my advice to anyone, the people who might be listening to this, is that, you know, we get nowhere if we shut doors, if we open doors, even if we end up closing them eventually. You know, it's a journey worth taking. And I think perhaps the current crisis has really put a spotlight on all of us, our activities, and in many ways why we're doing it. Because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I'm used to touring for about 5 months of the year. And I've, over, you know, many years, I've loved it. And it's the combination of the different cultures, the different foods, the different ways you have to respect other cultures. It's a melting pot. And since March last year, that has just completely disappeared. And yep. It's alone in all this. It's happening left, right, and center. So there are times to take stock. There are times to really think what it is that makes us tick, and, you know, what we get out of these various activities and what we want to contribute. So in many ways, despite the horrific numbers and the tragedy that this has caused, it's also, I think, a very enlightening time in history. And I think particularly for the world of the arts, and that's not just musicians. It's right the way across the arts. We're all having to, you know, really, really be quite honest with ourselves about what makes us tick and, you know, where we want to go with this. Because we have a choice. We can either say, oh, you know, I'll have a vaccination and then I'll wait for normal to come back. Well, in my opinion, there shouldn't be such a thing as normal in a musician's life. As soon as normal arrives, that's the moment to put the flute back in the box and never get it out again. So yeah, very, 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 very weird times. And I personally, I've had no direct involvement with this virus. And I mean, apart from a neighbor next door got it and fortunately is okay now, I've not been badly affected by what's going on. But I really do feel very sorry for people who've had older relatives who would have lived that much longer if this thing hadn't come along. And you know, the younger ones that have sadly gone as well.
Right.
But there we go.
I've always thought that it was difficult for a symphony orchestral player to then jump off, launch into more of a solo career, because as a symphony work, the record label, everything's already integrated within the big machine. And you have been able to just step off of that environment. And you, as you said, you just kind of jumped in. And I love that. I mean, that's because even though you say you're not, but you're a composer, you're a writer, you're an arranger. You have this amazing, the Simply Flute. I mean, this whole empire that you've built now.
Well, you know, it's... I think, you know, as I said in the article, which you very, very kindly published in the Flute View, you know, not every, we're all different, and I think that's the most important thing to come out of it for me as much as anyone else. And I just knew that I didn't, you know, it didn't suit me to be that person who was 65 and, you know, having to retire from orchestras, which is what happens over here. And I do remember vividly on one occasion going to a commercial recording session, which was completely freelance. And I looked around the room, and significantly, I was the oldest person there. And I just thought, you know, there comes a point where it makes sense to move on. And I think, you know, you've got, you know, we've all got to be feeling, you know, within ourselves, you know, if that's where we want to go. I mean, I've got very good friends who've stayed right until the end of their symphonic days up to the age of 65 and thoroughly enjoyed it. And, you know, they got to the age of 65 and they stopped doing it, and that's it. I knew I wanted to do other things. And I kind of wasn't, you know, I couldn't say I want to do X, Y, and Z, and I want to do it by such and such day. I just knew there were other avenues that I wanted to explore. And so I needed to move on. But as I also said in that over our heads, we all need food, you know, as far as it's possible as musicians to sort of to live comfortably, we want to do it to the best of our ability. And I also knew that by doing that, you know, a line, you know, significant line of income would be severed. But I also knew that I could, in a sense, I couldn't stay, because I knew it was a lie to myself. So within me, there was the conflict of interest. On the one hand, money, 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 yes, please. And on the other hand, you've got to go and do something else before it's effectively too late. So that was the key thing for me. And then, of course, you know, as I explained in the interview, an issue happened. And, you know, ideally, looking back, that's not the best way to leave, but I was a coward, so I needed something to help me on my way. And that just provided me with the impetus to do it. And then, you know, it's very funny. Obviously, the badge of having been the principal flute in the London Symphony Orchestra for 20 years, you know, was significant. But then equally, the other thing I think we forget is that there are going to be generations coming through after us, and they've got to feel inspired. Now, when I was young, inspiration was the principal flute of the London Symphony Orchestra. And of course, as I've got older, inspiration for younger people has changed. And quite conveniently, as we get older, we forget what it was like to be young and to have that kind of sort of completely wide-eyed enthusiasm. Well, of course, for someone who's 12 to 18 years old, if I say flute player on the up-and-coming James Bond movie, wow! So you know, it's that connection that I think is crucially important. And, you know, I think sometimes classical musicians are guilty of not realizing that if we're going to keep what we have alive and thriving, we've got to connect with the next generations in a way that's going to actually inspire them to continue the story of whatever classical music is in the future. But yeah, it was curious. But then, having left the orchestra, I mean, things just happened, and when they didn't happen, I made them happen.
Yes.
And I think, you know, this is another thing. Many years ago, it's got to be about 15 years ago, I just left the London Symphony Orchestra. And I've got a very good friend, an excellent flute player in Hong Kong called Matthew Wu. I don't know if you know Matthew Wu. And he runs the Hong Kong Flute Academy. And he was very keen for me to go out to Hong Kong. So I said, yeah, I'd love to do it. And about 2 months before I was due to go out there, he emailed me and said, Paul, we're really looking forward to your visit. We've got the money for the recital. We've got the money for the classes. You're going to play a concerto with the flute orchestra. We've got the money for that. We've got the money for your accommodation. The only area we're struggling at the moment is that we're having difficulty raising the money for your flights. So I got in touch with Cathay Pacific, and I got in touch with their marketing department. And I said, I'm going to be in Hong Kong these days. I also have a relationship with a champagne house. And I give a talk on the history of champagne, the flute, and music. That to your Marco Polo Club flight members, who are all lawyers, barristers, and doctors. They said, we've never had anything like that before. We'd love you to do it. What's your fee? And I said, a business class return. And I got it. So that, I mean, this is the other thing. I mean, there's, I think in the United Kingdom, we're very guilty of the first question that anyone asks is, if you've got an idea, you know, as a flute player, the first question anyone asks is, how much is it going to cost? Now, what I love about my trips to the USA is whenever I come up with an idea, the first reaction is, hey, that's a great idea. So you already feel the sort of positive energy there. Even if nothing happens, you've got off to a good start. But I'm a firm believer, whatever the situation is, it's so important to see if you can make it work before you put the barriers up. And that was a prime case of it, you know. And actually, what was great fun, I knew that I had to get, there was one flight that I had to be on to get back to London because I had a rehearsal for an important concert that I couldn't miss. And of course, what Cathay Pacific gave me was a crew flight. And it was business class on the way out. Anyway, on the way back, I got to the airport. And I got to the counter and they said, very sorry, we've got a problem with your seat on this flight. Can you come back in 40 minutes time? I had to be on that flight. So I went away and got a cup of coffee and then I started writing, you know. Yeah, my horns came out and I started writing the letter from Hells telling them why I had to be on that flight. And I got back and I walked to the ticketing desk. And I got to the ticketing desk. I said, here's my ticket. You told me to come back in 40 minutes. I really do need to be on that flight. And said, thank you, Mr. Edmund Davis. It's all sorted now. You're going back first class. So, you know, never give up.
Absolutely. That's the spirit.
Yeah. The 28-day warm-up book, which I've got the 28-day warm-up book, which has got a new cover, everyone, with uh-huh. the Simply Flute logo in the middle. Yes. That's now, I think that's about 13 years ago I produced that, 13 or 14 years. And again, it was just, I think I got, you know, there are so many books that we all use. And of course, they're very good. But then we end up only using those books. And I for me, there's a danger because the grey mist descends. And if I have to play Taffanel and Gobert daily exercises yet again, I was getting very sort of, I mean, I my mind is elsewhere. I can't do them and focus on what's there. It's my problem. In the same way, I have a miserable time with Moyes de la Sonorité. It really, you know, just going, ah, ah, I mean, great. If you've got the brain for it, I'm delighted for you. It just bores me stupid. And, you know, I did that, you know, because as has we were talking about this earlier, so often, you know, your teachers are there to instruct you. Great. But, and of course you do it because that's what you're told, and you don't question it. And in many ways, it's right not to question it. But I should have had the courage to tell my flute teacher, sorry, I found that really boring. And it never happened. But there we go, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
And so that's how you started, in a way? The Simply Flute concept, how did that begin, other than your first publications and then?
Well, I've always wanted, again, going back to the Luddite that I am, I like technology because I'm excited by it. You know, when a DVD player, when the CD came out, I thought, wow, amazing. And when we started recording for CD, it was fantastic. I mean, having said that, I loathe how digital sound destroys the natural warmth of the flute. There are very few engineers in the world who I think can make a flute really sound good. But, you know, I was very excited about the CD. DVD came out, very excited about that. Blu-ray came out, very excited about it. The internet, I was very excited about the internet. And even in the late 1990s, I was doing something through the London Symphony Orchestra with the European Space Agency, whereby we were transmitting from satellites to Bilbao, the university in Bilbao, and other places in Europe. And at that stage, it was this sort of distortion and disruption everywhere. But it was cutting edge and terribly exciting. Now, wind forward 20 plus years, this crisis has taken place. And thank goodness for things like Instagram. You know, even though the technology is still nothing like as refined as it needs to be for us to function as musicians, it's massively a step in the right direction.
Well, it was your daily Facebook posts that drew me into your world. I had always heard of you, but then it was the seeing you every day, or what seemed like every week, once a week on Facebook.
Well, I think we've all got various reasons and reactions, and I think, you know, again, if I look back on it, at the time I didn't realize it, but looking back on it, that was my reaction. I had to be busy doing something because my normal busy routine had been completely disrupted, literally overnight. And so, you know, I could have either just sort of wailed out on the sofa with sort of, you know, crisps or fries and bottles of beer, or I could actually do something about it and sort of exercise parts of me that were dormant. Now, you know, you very kindly said, oh, I'm a composer, and I that's too big a word for me. But I enjoy dabbling with music. I think I said, because of my history. I mean, my father was a Church of England clergyman, but he was an incredible pianist. Not a concert pianist, but you could mention a melody to him and he'd harmonize it quite comfortably at the piano, and he could spend hours just, you know, improvising. Now I can do that on a flute, but in an incredibly limited way by comparison, because you extract. But ever since my life as a choir boy in Canterbury Cathedral, I've had this concept of melody. And that's why I go back to the 19th century as well, because, the Europe was alive with opera then. And it's this whole thing of, there's one article, I think it was for the either the Galley study number 4, study number 5, which is soon up on the website. You know, the rote concept of study to a 19th century Italian flute player, I think would have been an abomination, because they everything they wanted to do in terms of improving their technique was through the source of music rather than the source of technique. And I suppose that's something that not only I feel, but I'd like to express. Yeah. I always feel, if something has got shape, it's worth doing. And you could argue, oh, yes, but you it's your job to put shape into Taffner and Gobert EJ1, for example. Yes, of course it's our job to do that. But because it's always repetitive and always the same format of repetition, I find it difficult, and I'm delighted when people can absorb it, but it's just not for me. So I've kind of needed to adapt. I had to actually write exercises for myself where I felt that,
like,
I was going on these journeys.
The Australian.
Okay. Is that the one you did a yeah. Yeah, and I mean that one's that's.
I loved it.
Okay. I think I've got another one. It's in the pipeline. I think it's even better than the Australian one, but don't tell the Australians that. But I've got another one in the pipeline that it's literally on the desk over there, buried underneath the pile of stuff. It's all written, but I've got to put the dynamics in and slurrings in. But I will make sure you get a copy of that, because it's a similar one to that, but much better. Don't tell the Australians. I started doing classes for flute clubs, Zoom classes.
Yeah, you did Hawaii. And each one gets their own version of you, which I think is awesome.
Well, I like to vary it, but I also, for each one, I decided to take, funny enough, I've just sent it off to today. I did a class for the Sacramento Flute Club.
Ah!
And I wrote an interval melody for them based on the letters of Sacramento. Uh-huh. And it sort of came out, it just ended up being a rather nice melody. I like things that are slightly unsettling melodically as well. I like throwing in the occasional rogue note, just because then people go, it's sort of like a mild shock to people. Then they think, oh, that shouldn't be there, should it? Yes, it should, because otherwise you won't concentrate. So I wrote them a melody, and then very, very, very foolishly, I am as stupid as I look, I offered to write them a flute choir ditty based on that, and they took me up on it, of course. And I finished it literally today and sent it off to them. I haven't heard anything yet, but that was again just. I think it's we've all got to find ways of addressing the times that we live in, and part of it is obvious, because we've got to feel comfortable in our own skins. But also, I think it is it's a really good point in history to reevaluate the importance of connection. And I think that the internet has done many good things, but perhaps until this virus came along, it was steadily making us more insular. Now, the virus has made us more insular physically, because we can't go outside and meet people. But I think it's brought us much more together on the internet, which isn't necessarily the answer, but thank goodness it's here. Because otherwise, I think a lot of people would be really, really struggling with this. And, I'm not superhuman. I get days where I wake up and you know, I don't. It's like when you, particularly in America, because you always drive to the supermarket, and if you've bought too many things in the supermarket, and you've got you're carrying too many bags back to your car, you're just desperate to get to the trunk of the car to offload everything that you're carrying. And then suddenly, someone you haven't seen for 5 years says, "Paul, hi. Oh, wait, how are you?" And you're standing there laden with these bags. And at the same time, there's this person, Samantha went to music college and, you know, Joanna's now at school. And you're just thinking, I just want to stop and get to the car and offload. And I think that feeling of heaviness, and, you know, like today, I've had a great day. I've got tomorrow. I might wake up and just feel, oh, here we go again. You know, another day of this sort of unknown that's affecting us all. So I think it's important that we do communicate as much as possible, which something like this is making it, you know, allowable and doable.
Yeah, well, that's, I guess, why I have time. And so since COVID I've been doing these interviews, but before COVID, I never did this. So.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, it's, you know, some people will watch it. Some people won't watch it. I did a, you know, someone asked me to do a podcast towards the end of last year. No idea, you know, if anyone listened to it. But I mean, the most important thing is we can.
Yes.
And then if something happens whereby someone, you know, gets, you know, either gets an idea from what's going on today, or, you know, either finds themselves agreeing or disagreeing, it doesn't matter. If there's a reaction, that's all that matters. And I think, you know, I hope that the future for music actually will be exciting. It will be very different to what we've known it in the past.
In what way do you think it'll be different?
I think I think it's going to take a while for people. In the same, I think, you know, quite possibly with restaurants or the hospitality part of everything. I think that people will start off by being nervous. You know, the idea of going into a crowded theatre, I think, you know, we've been removed so long that I don't think this. I mean, I hope that I'm wrong, but the second that everyone's allowed back in, I can't see, you know, floods going through the door. I think people are going to measure it up against their own situation, how comfortable they feel, etc. So I think it will be a slow return. If it's going to be a return to what was, I strongly doubt. But I've got no idea at this stage. I can't look into the crystal ball and see what will happen. Except I think a lot of very exciting cross-media things and cross-cultural things will take place. And that, again, is the power of the internet.
I certainly feel like I've gotten closer to some people like you. I had never met you before until today.
Yes.
And I have several people like this that now I feel closer to people who are so far away, you know?
Yeah. And at the moment you can hear me perfectly in time and I can hear you perfectly in time. If we were to be playing on Zoom, there'd be all sorts of time lag issues. They'll sort that out, you know, in time and hopefully sooner than later. So I think, and this also then takes me back slightly to the 19th century, because there's so much literature written for woodwind and brass instruments, which are duos. And what we do now is we spend so much time focused on our one line. And it's what I was alluding to earlier, you know, harmony is just as important as melody. And we can only really understand melody if we've got a good understanding of the harmony that's holding that melody up. And so they realized that in the 19th century. And in the 20th century, everything became gradually more single line in terms of our education. So one of the things I hope to do through Simply Flute, and I've introduced this recently, we've introduced something called Practice Along with Paul. We call them PORPs. And basically all I'm doing is taking some of my melodies and I'm playing. I mean, I love it because I get to practice, but I'm recording these melodies. And then, you know, if you go through all keys, they might be half an hour long. But then people can play along with me, just the same line as me. But it's a reference point for them. I mean, you know, there's no such thing as an in-tune flute player, but some of us try to get as close as we can. But, you know, that then becomes a reference point for them, and they're hearing whilst they're playing as well. Now, I'm writing more and more duets on the exercises because, and then what do? On the repeat, we just swap parts. Mm. So they're not constantly playing the same thing. And this is another way of trying to engage people in a way that's actually just more satisfactory. I think playing any single line instrument is, you know, it's a complicated process.
It's a lonely process.
And a lonely process, yes, 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 a very lonely process.
Another thing that you've developed is the head joint.
Tell us about that. No. Funny you should mention it. I just have one here. This I've done. I've had an association with a company called Northbridge Flutes, which are step-up flutes. But the reason I was happy to do this was because the guy who makes all their head joints is an American called Chris McKenna, who's up in New York. And, you know, he's spent time at all sorts of flute companies in the past. As far as I can make out, he's just as happy making a guitar out of wood as he is constructing a flute. I mean, he's quite the most extraordinary person I've ever met, but, you know, fascinating and incredibly knowledgeable. And he hand-carved. The reason I was happy with the association with Northbridge Flutes was twofold. Firstly, I knew David Kilkenny, who's the owner from my days at Powell Flutes. And secondly, because Chris McKenna hand carves all the head joints on these step-up flutes. Now, again, you know, this part of the flute is the most important part because that's where your voice starts. Now, the rest of it needs to be okay as well. But if that is, you know, really very, very good, you've got, it doesn't, you know, what happens after that doesn't need to be of, you know, amazing expense. So the Northbridge Flutes, they got very, very respectable bodies, but it's the head joints that are just amazing. And I've had this idea about head joints for years and years and years. And I started talking to Chris about this. And the reason is, very simply, and I won't bore people for too long with this, like, yeah, everyone focuses on what goes on inside there. And people are forever, you know, they get their little knives and they go, wee, oh, wee, oh, wee, oh, wee, oh, and then, yeah, that's better. And so I was sure, of course, what goes on inside is of great importance. But I was very curious as to what goes on the outside. Now, if I show you the other end of my flute, it's black. And that's because I basically rot silver.
I do too.
You do too. Good. That's why you've got gold.
That's why I prefer gold.
Oh, you're an expensive lady. Right. So I rot silver. And I'm not going to clean it because if you start cleaning flute, you know, this is a tool for me. It's a means of communication. And if you look at it, it's mechanism. It's a piece of machinery. And even though we lovingly call it a flute, it's actually a lump of metal with lots of springs and screws. And we've got to make that into a musical instrument. Well, that was my first major mistake in life. So there we go. We got a flute. I rot. Now, I haven't done it on this one because this is a new head joint. But when you blow here, you create a V. Mm-hmm. Your air creates a natural V. And I could see on my old head joints that the V was never allowed to... I'm doing very rude things here. The V was never allowed to complete its journey. And my feeling on that is very much like a car, a sports car in a wind tunnel. You know, they follow what happens to the air over the body. Now, air sticks to the body. And my theory was that if the longer we could make this here, the front edge of the lip plate, as you can see, it pretty much wraps around. Mm. But this edge is the longest I've ever seen on, you know, on the front edge. And it means that the air can finish its V, because on shorter lip plates, that V reaches a cliff edge where the lip plate ends, and then after that, that air is dead. Now, I mean, yeah, I haven't played today, but Ian. In particular, the low notes, and that's on zero practice today, I hasten to add. But that, you know, the low notes speak so much better. The articulation I have found to be that much better. Playing pianissimo, and this is a long joke. You can go super quiet on it as well.
Wow. So,
and of course, this was my great moment. The arrival of COVID, I launched that head joint.
Fantastic.
So it's yet to get out into the wild, but I'm playing on it the whole time. I've got many amazing head joints from different head joint manufacturers, and they're all great, but I'm so loving the centeredness of sound that I'm getting on this, coupled with its incredible dynamic range and ease of articulation. So I'm hugely indebted to Chris, because he was prepared to take, you know, the gamble on this lunatic Englishman coming up with some crazy ideas about what goes on the outside. But so far, and I'm now touching wood, it seems there seems to be some elements of truth in this. And, you know, we will continue developing it. I'm very happy with the way it is now. But the few people that have bought them, because it's not widely available, because it's not a great time to be trying flute head joints. But the few people who have bought them are absolutely delighted with them. Mm. And, you know, it's transformed their sound for them. Well, you know, that's an encouraging start. So we will see.
I used to hear from my teacher about that. You call it the V, and he would call it the triangle.
Okay,
that would form. And that the goal was to create that triangle when you blow.
Yeah. But again, you know, this is another thing. We all blow in different ways. And the way, you know, I go back to my singing years as that's what I'm trying to emulate on the flute. And that's my way of trying to make the flute sound like a musical instrument. There are many, many other ways of doing it. So we just have to find out which is the right way for us. And, you know, not everyone wants to approach the flute in the way I do. I mean, thank goodness, we'd all be a very boring lot if we did. But that's my approach. And now, by definition, that automatically means that I use substantially, you know, a large quantity of air when I play the instrument. I don't blow into a flute, I blow through a flute. Because the key reason for this is that, you know, in a very basic way, all we've got here is a series of organ pipes all in one tube. So, you know, when you play a low B or a low C, that's the longest pipe. so you get the lowest note. So when we're playing, we're constantly darting around in here. Well, now my argument would be, if you want to dart around and actually make everything as alive and legato as possible, you have to be spinning air through the flute in order to facilitate that, because there are huge faults within the tube taking place as we move from one note to the next. So, oh, crikey. never work with animals, children, or Paul Edmund Davis. Oh, technology. I could just see £1,000 worth of iPad suddenly going splat. But there we go.
So we're still here. We're here.
You know, the other thing is, I guess a bit like you, though I think you've been on board with this for many years.
What?
Because of your sort of joy of the entrepreneurial aspect. But, you know, March last year, because Pasha Mansurov, who is a brilliant flute player, but also he's the brains behind the technology side of Simply Flute, and he's brilliant at it. He keeps joking now, because I haven't seen him since February last year. And he always jokes about the fact that, now I've got an iPad and an iPhone, and I've got this Wizzo light up here, which is a recent purchase.
Yeah, well, I've got my light here too, because I can show you.
Are you an LED light?
See, that's no light, and there's my light. Yes, LED.
Ah,
it's warm.
Mine's nearly on the ceiling, so I can't get it. I've got to bring it down. But you know, I mean, we've all had to learn new skills. And I mean, I pity my neighbours, because at the moment I'm trying to record this afternoon. I've been trying to record the teaching notes, the videos for the next Galley study that's coming up on Simply Flute, hopefully this weekend. But yeah, I've had a good day in many ways, but my speech has just gone crazy. So and of course it's just me standing in front of the iPad on its very special stand, because I've got a teleprompter as well, though I'm trying not to use that. But then of course you instead of saying articulation, you say monsoon or something like that. So you then have to stop, walk all the way around, turn, and I've got my iPad and my iPhone on different stands recording for editing purposes.
Right.
And so you then got to walk around, turn everything, to stop recording, erase, decide what on earth the word is you meant to say in the first place, press the buttons, walk all the way. I mean, it's a West End farce going on in here. But then I've also suddenly noticed that my language has been getting somewhat colourful as things go more and more wrong. Yeah. So I think I'm going to get a knock on the door from my neighbours saying, do you really have to use those words?
No, but I think it's great that you're just doing it yourself. I thought you had somebody who came to film you.
No. I mean, I've learned how to do all sorts of things. I mean, do I enjoy? I mean, I'd much rather just focus on the words and the playing, but it's that's just not possible at the moment. So I have to be darting around. But then I send everything. I'll make it in a gobbledygook way, and then I'll just send it all to Pasha. And the next thing I see, it's a very polished entry on Simply Flute. And quite frankly, I'm using one Rode NST microphone at the moment, which is okay. But it's good enough. But if you really want high definition flute sound, and I'm using GarageBand to record it all. I did have Logic, but Logic and I didn't agree so well.
I use Logic.
You use Logic. Well, you see, I think Logic likes intelligent people. And when they realized that I was a no-go, Logic gave up with me. But I mean, at some stage, because I don't have a dedicated, I'm trying to move out of London. I don't have a dedicated studio at the moment, but when I'm out of London, I'll have space and that studio, and then I'll be properly set up.
Where are you planning to go to move?
Anywhere.
Anywhere?
Anywhere. Well, ideally, I'd go to France, but now we've left Europe, which is, I'm so sad about, because my spiritual home is definitely in France. And, I've got this connection with the Champagne region. And the Champagne region is the closest wine region to the United Kingdom. And the British are very, very... We are a very strange breed, because we love going to France for our holidays or on to Spain, which is further south. But we're not interested in the bit in the north of France, because the bit in the north is a bit like England. It's wet and damp. So we have to get as far south as possible, where there's something yellow in the sky called the sun. Mm-hmm. And so most British people bypass the Champagne region completely, because they're just hell-bent on getting as far south. But it's only 3 hours drive. Well, from my door to the centre of Champagne is 5 hours in the car. It's and for Americans, that's nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's a fascinating area historically, and of course of the wines. But when you do go further south in France, the climate, for example, in the Côte d'Azur, they have the highest percentage of clear days anywhere in Europe. Mm. Now, I don't need it to be hot, 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 but I love blue and clear. Mm-hmm. And I love clear nights as well, because the skies down there are amazing. I think, initially I'm going to, because of what's happened with us leaving, I mean, who knows what's going to happen in terms of taxation and things like that. So I think my primary concern is to move out of London, but to be somewhere on the way to the Champagne region, so near to the south coast, which would be Kent or Sussex. Mm. So it's further south in England.
Okay.
But I want to be in the countryside, because London is a fantastic city, but I've lived in the same road for 36 years, and that's a long time. And now, sure, I can play into the middle of the night, but the way that things are now going, if I'm going to be spending more of my life, in one place, I want it to be a place where I can comfortably make noise at 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't want to be in a city to do that. I've got to be fairly remote to do that, and I love remote. I think it's
I do too. I have a cabin in Big Sur right now. But no Wi-Fi, so I have to structure my week around, okay, where am I going to be?
that's something that's, I think, is, when you spend your whole life in a city, as I have done, and when I was working with orchestras, it was either concerts here or concerts in New York or concerts in Tokyo and Vienna and Frankfurt and Paris. It's a very exciting and vibrant life. Well, loved it, but I've done it.
Can I read a quote that you wrote?
Because I love this. Oh, dear.
You said, as indicated, travel has its benefits and rewards, but because of the time it consumes and the in-transit nature of everything between leaving home and return, it is almost impossible to focus on anything other than the trip being undertaken. In some respects, one is temporarily living in a bubble of chaos or disorder, albeit highly pleasurable one. That was written in the Flute View magazine by Paul Edmund Davies.
Really?
Yes!
I'll have words with him. it is true, because, and this is the other thing about my orchestral days. I think there are people on this planet who are just natural flute players, And I'm quite envious of, you know, they're of musicians of all breeds. Yeah, I know a few musicians who can virtually pick up any instrument and within minutes or half an hour sound pretty competent on them. Yeah, they've just got a connection. Now, I love the flute, but I've always had to really, really work at it. You know, it's nothing's ever come. You know, I've never been in a situation where I've been able to sit back and think, oh, you know, I don't have to worry about technique. I've basically, you know, been a flute warrior throughout my life. So when I was in the orchestral jobs, you know, if I had a morning rehearsal and an evening show, all of that afternoon, I'd be spending practicing the part that I had to play that night, just to make sure that what I was as bulletproof as could be. And I think that's it. I mean, you know, if I look back on that now, I kind of think, well, in many ways, that's a little bit sad, because there's all that time where I could have been going to art galleries or museums.
But you enjoyed it.
Well, I think it was fear that made me do it, because failure is probably one of our greatest fears. Either failure from the point of view of playing a wrong note, or failure from a catastrophe or a disaster. And again, I can't remember if I said it in the interview, but you know, we're very strange like this, because have you ever seen a tennis match where a player hasn't made a mistake? Have you ever seen a motor race where a Formula One driver hasn't made a mistake? No, everyone makes mistakes. It's part of the human genes, if you like. But certainly in the world of classical music, the idea that you play a wrong note, you know, people, you'll be remembered for that rather than all the right notes that you play. And there's something wrong in that. I mean, you know, it shouldn't be like that, but it is. You know, there are all sorts of jokes relating to that. But then you've got the whole thing of airports. Now, I mean, I love being, you know, I think if I had to, it's like, what's your favorite color? It's a crazy question. But whenever I go to Japan, I love the food that I eat there. It suits me down to the ground. And, you know, I've got very good, you know, I've been to Japan so many times, I've got very good friends over there now. And I love going there, but of course, you know, that's completely off the radar at the moment. To get there, you've got to spend 12 hours on an airplane. You've got to go to the airport. You've got to hang around airports. When you get there, I don't really get jet lag, but you know, your body knows something has gone a bit weird with it. And you kind of think, well, you know, and so that's what I mean. If I've got something I really want to get on with, that has to be put on the back burner whilst this trip is taking place. And that's why I've enjoyed the last 10 months, is because I've had the opportunity to focus on simply flute that wasn't there beforehand.
Yes.
And yes, the more I've done it, the more it's grown, and the more I'm delighted, the more, you know, people are beginning to visit us and actually enjoy what's there. Because it's an ongoing proposition for me. You know, there's never going to be a finishing point. You know, I'm having too much fun with it. It needs to be something that, and I hope that people, you know, I recently, you know, as a byproduct, you know, we're in the middle of winter. Well, it's very easy to complain about winter and how miserable it is, but why don't we focus on the positive things? So I wrote this little article recently about candles. And as you can see, the proper church candle. And they burn in such a different way to other candles. And they've got a glow that's so different to other candles. And so, you know, this is the time of year to really enjoy something as simple as a candle. And then the next articles I'm going to write, you know, I love hot chocolate at this time of year.
That's my candle. Ah,
that's your candle. Now, is that a smelly candle?
No, I don't like smell, but I have candles everywhere also.
Okay, yeah. And I agree with you. You know, I mean, I do allude to this, that, you know, the candles used to be a luxury, and they used to be that's how the aristocracy, or with beeswax candles, it was how the aristocracy lit their homes.
Because it doesn't melt.
It's the smell. It's predominantly the smell, because the other candles were made from animal fat, and they smell. So beeswax candles they burn more gradually, and they are odor free.
So, I roll my own beeswax candles, and they just don't drip like all the others.
Yeah, these guys don't drip either, because these are predominantly beeswax. But so many of the candles that you buy in the shops now, I mean, they might be very expensive, but they're made of dirt cheap materials, many of them. You know, and I, like you, I'm not a fan of the scented candle. Whenever I go into a house where they're burning scented candles, my first reaction, they must have dreadful body odor in here.
Yeah.
So you know what it's like. You know, up in your log cabin, do you have a real fire up there?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You sit in front of that, and you look at it, and hours go by.
Absolutely.
And it's the same with candles. Yeah, when you get a really good candle that the top of it is just glowing, and maybe you can't really see the flame any longer because it's sunk in, but that glow is magical. Mm-hmm. Everyone's looking for something these days. Well, I find it in fires and candles. You know, I can just lose myself in those for hours on end.
I'm with you.
Yeah. I don't do yoga because I know that a toe would end up in the wrong part of my anatomy, so I just don't do it.
Well, you mentioned that you were kind of you had all these other interests. What else are you focusing on these days?
I got interest from the point of view that I'm my primary interest at the moment has to be simply flute. But for example, there's one section on it which is called coffee noodles, and they're something between an exercise and a study to warm up your day. And I wrote 7 of them, one for each day of the week. Well, I've got this great printer now who's very close to where I live, and they publish a lot of the Peters editions. So they're specifically set up for music publishing. So I get any of my books when I reprint them, I get them to do it. And I just thought, well, coffee noodles would make a great digital and standalone printed book. But this was the other thing that was part of the reason for Simply Flute, which I don't think I mentioned in the interview. And that's the fact that, you know, when you buy a study book, because it's on paper, you're limited in the amount of pages that you can have in a book. Otherwise, the book's going to be too heavy, which means you're limited in the number of keys that you can pass an exercise through. If you post this as a digital page, you can go through all keys. No trees have died in the process, and no trees have been tattooed in the process. So, you know, it's a means of exploring. For example, let's say Anderson Opus 15, number 3. Well, why not in other keys? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be great to explore it? Why does it always have to be in G major?
My teacher used to make me do that in other keys.
Well, there are nice people in the world and there are others. Oh, no. But I mean, you say this is another thing that, you know, because of my own insecurities, when I was young, I always had to look at music. You know, I was terrified of not looking at music. One of the great things about the last 10 months is I've been wandering around playing things that are in, you know, from memory, that are so much in my system, you don't need music. And that's another thing with exercises. You know, we don't want to have, music in front of us the whole time. The more that we can actually, you know, work from here, and dare I say it, from our souls and hearts, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So at the moment I'm proofreading the final version of that. There's always so much, you know, as I say, there's duets I want to get stuck into that are coming up on Simply Flute. So there's enough for me to be getting on with. I'm writing, you know, another article for my travels page, which is where that's where the sort of the magazine aspect of the site is.
I've noticed that you do travel videos of where you are and
I have done in the past. I mean, obviously, I'm not doing it at the moment because I'm not traveling.
I also have done it around a bit.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and you know, I mean, everyone's kind of doing these things now in a much more efficient way. But I started doing that 5 years ago, and it served a purpose then. Whether I do that again now, I'm not sure. But it was fun at the time, and it was a means of, you know, showing people the diversity, or the intended diversity of Simply Flute.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So apart from that, I'm reading about because the Crusades are very much a part of my discovery of the history of the Champagne region.
Mm.
That's my current reading, and there are some great books, basically shedding light on what happened and who was in favor at what time, etc. So I do quite like history. Mm-hmm. Whereas, of course, this is another thing. When I was at school, the history teacher made history seem so boring.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the other important thing. Like I said earlier about, you know, young people, they need to have a thread from older generations that inspire them. And you know, if this teacher, who is incredibly knowledgeable, I mean, he's a brilliant brain, but he didn't have the ability to transmit his passion for his chosen subject to young people. If I'd been at university, the way he projected it would have been more appropriate. But at the age of 12 or 13, I needed someone to bring this to light and to life. And I think this is something that we've all got a responsibility to do, is to try and bring things to life for people. Because, you know, we're all finding our way. We're all finding our path through life. But if in the process we can drag a few people along with us, kicking and screaming, albeit, then, you know, if it gets them to be passionate about their approach to the same subject, that's also great.
No, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. I love that.
Yeah. Now, is anyone still out there?
Well, this will be shown on our timeline as well.
Okay.
And we have historically gotten a fair amount of traction on there. And I'm going to reactivate our podcast. So eventually it'll be out on iTunes and all podcast platforms.
Okay, lovely. Well, I mean, everything you've said has just gone straight over my head. Otherwise, I'm just nodding, dribbling a little bit and saying, yes, that's great. So I mean, whatever the appropriate, I think thank you is the appropriate reaction to that. Is there anything else you wanted to cover?
I think I mainly wanted to focus on Simply Flute. Everybody, please go to simplyflute.com.
Yay, come to Simply Flute.
There's so much there. The website looks beautiful. They're free little nuggets. And then I encourage you to dive, make a subscription. That's by month or by year. It's a wonderful...
Less than the cost of 2 coffees a month.
There you go.
I'm cheap, you know.
Well, that's what I say about the Flute View. The Flute View for a whole year on the Flute View is the cost of 1 coffee.
Oh, is it? Right. You're even more cheap.
I'm dirt cheap.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you clearly like to set your standards really low. Oh, Fluty Flutist One says Simply Flute is so amazing. Thank you, Fluty
yes.
Flutist One. That's terrific.
It
I
is.
Think you're amazing too.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, as I say, you know, it's growing, and I think you know the very fact that people are coming back means that we've got to be doing something that is meeting with some approval somewhere down the line. So, I wanted to be a global family.
I think you are. You are. I certainly have enjoyed your Facebook postings where you give a little bit of an exercise and then you work through it and you tell us. I mean, it just really, there's so much of what you do. You're an entrepreneur, like I said before, a composer, a comedian, a travel host.
I think we have a phrase for that over here. It's called a general dog's body.
No. And then I loved reading these articles. Thank you so much for the time that you spent in putting and answering all the questions for the Flute View magazine. It's just such a wealth of knowledge, and Simply Flute, as Fluty Flutist says.
I mean, as I think I said in the article, you know, you're the first people to get all that info. So, you know, thank you for asking, because otherwise, you know, I'd have stayed in my little rabbit hutch and not ventured out.
Yeah.
But it's lovely, and I, you know, these things are really enjoyable to do, and it's like you know, if I give a class anywhere, you know, I will, of course, you know, I'll try and give as much information out in that class as possible, and I, you know, I've got my own view on how things should be done and how things work. Basically, my whole teaching philosophy boils down to sort of just embracing logic. But I always say, a little bit like that interview, that if anyone goes away with one idea, then I'm happy. You know, that's all it takes. Just one idea. If they go away and say, well, even again, if it's disagreeing, to disagree is fantastic. If it's just saying, well, I don't agree with that, and then them going away and thinking about it themselves, fantastic. Yeah, that's the important thing. The important thing is to embrace the moment. That's crucial.
Embrace the moment. Well,
yeah.
Paul Edmund Davies, you are an inspiration. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. And I hope that we get to speak again very soon.
We will.
Yeah, great stuff. So now what do I press now?
Don't worry about it. I'll press it.
Great. And to anyone who's there, to all those people who have listened or watched, stay well and stay safe.
Yes.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.